Today, the decentralization of finance. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a little philosophy on the side. I'm joined again today by Caroline Bella, BTC Markets CEO. Now, you're locked down in Melbourne, but we can still talk about the exciting world of decentralised finance and the digitalisation and all those things that will be there in the future for us.
Yes, absolutely. So decentralized finance is probably one of the biggest trends that's happening in digital finance at the moment. So it was originally known as open banking, I suppose, or open finance is what it was previously known as, and it's kind of evolved into decentralized finance, which by itself means effectively you're just taking out the middleman from the financial services. So where we know it, you know, go to the bank for lending and so forth, removing that and instead replacing it with algorithms and smart contracts. So using blockchain technology to kind of reimagine the financial infrastructure.
Right. And the point is, of course, that it changes the orientation, right? Because many companies, you know, old banks have built from products out and they sort of throw products out there hoping that it will somehow stick with consumers, right? And, you know, it's an all size one size fits all, and frankly, a lot of people don't get particularly good service. This is turning it around, isn't it? Because what it's saying is that you are now much more in control, or you will be more in control as a consumer. Your data is your data, and you'll have much more choice. And essentially, those large organizations are going to get sliced and diced and chopped and caught up with much more and very different competition.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true on a couple of different fronts, because you've also got the whole fintech industry that's more established than decentralized finance, but the whole fintech industry that's there, and again, the open banking regimes that have been set up around the world that are going in to do that slice and dice, that real personalization around your financial products and services that you enjoy as a consumer. And with decentralized finance, I suppose it's coming along as part of that, was fintechs not necessarily built on blockchain. Decentralized finance is very much built, in this case, on the Ethereum blockchain. And it absolutely hands back that sense of control, if you so choose, to the end user. Point being, though, this is in a much more early developing state than the fintechs are. You know, there is some ground to go. But considering Ethereum itself only started life 5 years ago, and this is where we are now, you know, I would like to put the stop to the march of it, quite frankly.
Well, it's interesting. And of course, a lot of the fintechs that appeared in the last 4 or 5 years are really carbon copies of the old world, but just slightly digitally enabled, right? It hasn't fundamentally broken out necessarily into the new worlds are there. But we're starting to see that now in various areas as some of these new technologies and enabling capabilities are coming in over the top. And, you know, it really does start taking the financial system apart and then reassembling it into new pieces. And I think what's interesting about that is where the value flows are now starting to change quite considerably. So essentially those middle places which were occupied with people who basically clipped the ticket and, you know, passed it on, they're beginning to find it quite tough now.
Well, it's, you know, transformation and change comes to every industry. And I think probably the banking and financial services have had it quite well for quite a long time. Yes. And so it's a matter of time for that finally transformation and change is coming to it. I mean, with that, you know, people's finances are obviously not only, you know, in terms of personal security, but what we found is that there's also an emotional connection quite naturally to your money, because there's so much, as I tell my team, people's dreams and hopes are wrapped up in what they do with their money. Mm. So there is that emotional layer to it, which is probably why something like the established banking regimes have been around for so long, because you've got that comfort and familiarity. That said, however, I think that we're really seeing, with the times that we're living in anyway, a transformation across different sectors of our economy and how we operate and live. And I think we're going to see those changes come through, plus as well combined with the next generations that are coming up that are very comfortable with everything being digital and also increasingly comfortable with that removal of the middleman. They're increasingly comfortable with that sense of direct, which sits quite well, I suppose, with the blockchain economy to come, and that whole ethos around, you know, if they're not your keys, they're not your coins, and I suppose that sense of self-management that comes with it. So something like decentralized finance, although still only starting out, again, kind of sits quite nicely in amongst those different buckets. Mm. But that said, I still think, you know, that there's still some distance to go, and I still think there's a function there for banks. What is interesting, and what we've seen just recently announced coming out of the US, US national banks are now allowed to custody clients' crypto, which basically means the banks are now tipping into the crypto industry, which from my point of view has got a twofold effect. A, the banks have got to get savvy and quickly around how to, you know, what is this crypto world and what is blockchain? But equally for the crypto industry itself, they now have a competitor that has far substantial outreach, greater channels of distribution, you know, long established track records, real competitors are coming in. So that's really going to, on both sides, shake up the market with hopefully, you know, the end user being the overall winner of all of this. But you know, it's really interesting to see that this is what's coming now. And the US has started, so that's just going to trickle through the rest of the world, the Western world anyway.
Well, I used an analogy with somebody else the other day. I was talking to you about this and said, look, I regard the early days of Bitcoin and crypto as like the Napster days, right? You know, years and years ago, you know, Napster was one of the first, you know, audio sharing platforms around very early, you know, but it morphed and evolved. And now look, we've got Netflix and we've got, you know, so many other organizations. And so it's redefined effectively content delivery and what our expectations are. And then you've got the demographic shift, as you say, with young people just very comfortable with digital, very comfortable with online, very comfortable with streaming. And so over 20 or 30 years, you know, that industry has completely changed.
Yes.
You'd hardly recognize it. I mean, it's still got some of the same things. It's still got some of the same content. But, you know, the fact is, it's very different. And I suspect now we're going to see a similar mode of operation into financial services. And, you know, there will be some products and services that will be provided. But the delivery platforms will be different. The way that they're packaged and formulated will be different. And I think that there's an interesting conundrum going on here between, you know, the new upstart players around the edge and some of the more traditional players. And it's going to be now a question of to what extent traditional players really reinvent themselves and quickly, or whether they will just simply be overtaken by some of those other organizations who effectively get a new lease on life with perhaps more finance coming in from external players. So there's a real tussle ahead, I think. But I think the customer's going to win on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's still, as you've described, there is still some distance to go in all of this. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'm still quite cautious in all of these developments. But for me, the future is very clear. Very, very clear. And I think from us, I mean, the view that we have of the world sitting here in a crypto exchange in Australia, but I can see for us anyway, we've gone over the tipping point. I can see it in terms of the percentage of new users that we're having, the demographic of the new users that are coming on board, the different products that are being developed that are out there. I mean, I don't necessarily think, as you know, I've said this before, I don't think it necessarily needs to be binary. I don't think it needs to be one or the other. I think it can be complementary. I certainly would see crypto and digital assets more broadly as part of an expanded portfolio and services for people. The technology is agnostic. It's just simply however we use it. So there's nothing to be afraid of with this stuff. It's simply a question of, well, are the safeguards there? You know, how is it constructed? Do your research into it. But this isn't going anywhere, and this is only going to increase in its use case and the strengthening of its protocols and so on around it. It's fantastic. But as I say, for me, from the point of view that I have, overlooking this exchange and the industry in Australia, we've gone over the tipping point, 100%.
Yeah, very interesting. And a lot of things have changed quite recently, haven't they? Because we've noticed a significant spike in new adopters of both crypto, and some of that may be because, you know, they've got a government check and they need to know what to do with it, and they're going to put some of it into crypto land rather than the traditional land at the moment. And there does seem to be some significant uptick in momentum. And I think there's also people are getting a little more confident and a little more comfortable with some of these concepts and technologies. And the technologies themselves, of course, are also evolving and emerging and becoming a little easier to use.
Yes, absolutely. I think people are getting familiar, getting comfortable, as you've described. And I remember when the internet first came out, listening to radio shows in Ireland talking about, you know, not to be afraid of what email was. And I think we're having those conversations now and maybe a little bit more evolved. All I know myself, and I can speak kind of anecdotally, so this is, you know, my little insights, but the people in my life that are outside of digital assets that are now approaching me and saying, tell me what the story is again with this stuff, and I'm thinking of getting in, and you know, have I missed the boat? Is it a good time? I mean, for me, like, obviously I cannot give investment advice, I'm not a qualified financial advisor, but what I can share is, well, these are the numbers that we're seeing, this is the uptick that we're seeing, this is the developments that we're seeing globally as well as here, as well as here in Australia. And so, you know, be measured in it, but nonetheless, I think that there is, just from looking at the demographics that are coming to us and to me personally, what I will say though is that I still think that there is some way to go in educating perhaps more women about it. It's nothing to be afraid of. Come on, you know, and get involved and get and just get started on it. Because this, the whole point of decentralized finance or any of these blockchain evolutions is that it is flat. It is democratically open. It's nothing to be, there's no kind of scary, you know, restrictions around it. Everyone needs to get involved because it will benefit everyone if they do so. Would be my take on it. Again, no investor advice given there. I have to be very careful in my role to make sure of that. But yes, as I say, for us, it's like we've gone over the tipping point, definitely.
And I segment my surveys, you know, I survey households all the time between what I call the digital natives, in other words, people who've grown up digital and are very comfortable with it, digital migrants, so they're people who've adapted and evolved, and what I call the digital Luddites, right, which are those who say, oh, it's too hard, I'm not interested. And there's a bit of an age thing, but it's not purely age, it's also attitudinal. And what I've noticed in the last couple of years is the really interesting shift going on, so that the proportion of Luddites, in other words, those who really have no interest or appetite for it, is really dropped. And part of that is, of course, because, you know, time marches on and some people fall off the perch. But also there are a greater proportion of people now who are really interested in learning more about it. And your point about education, you know, that's part of what DFA is about. It's trying to help people understand more about this stuff and take away some of the myths and the fears and really trying to help people understand. So that there is a significant proportion now of people in that migrant camp who are saying, okay, I'm actually quite open to it now. I've got something on my phone. I'm not quite sure how to use it, but I'm actually quite keen to find out. So that's the second point. So that shift between the Luddites and the migrants is really already happening. But the other point to make is the natives, those who have grown up digital, right? It's been going long enough now, so a lot of those in their 20s and 30s have never known anything else.
Yeah.
And so they are naturally attuned. And I don't, well, you know, you probably have watched young people and the way that they use their digital stuff. I mean, it's just like second nature. And, you know, they just expect everything to be there. And they expect all their financial services relationships to be managed through this phone or whatever it is, the device they're using. And they're saying, why would I do anything different? So there is this huge mega trend which is coming through in terms of the demographic shift. And then you've got the technology trend, which is continuing to evolve and develop. And then you've got the investment trend. So there are lots of now large organizations around the world putting big bets on that the future is decentralized digital. And so all of those things are coming together at this point. So I think the next 5 to 10 years, you know, will be absolutely amazing in terms of seeing that transformation. And I guess the key message I'd have is, you know, you can't ignore this stuff. This is definitely happening. The trick is to begin to understand enough about it to be able to take the fears away and begin to understand how you can actually take it and use it and begin to own it. As I guess more companies also now begin to go down that similar route. But this is a massive transformation.
Absolutely. Well, there's a couple of points in that. I mean, I know today I saw that the NRL are now using blockchain technology to look after their patented goods and services. So, I mean, the technology has more uses than just crypto, and it's being adopted, it's being used. But also, just to your point about the big banks coming in, I know JP Morgan, which, you know, it was notorious, Jamie Dimon was coming out saying, oh, it's, you know, no way am I going near Bitcoin, while he had his own desk in JP Morgan trading and stuff. And now JP Morgan wants to bring out their own coin. Goldman Sachs, the same, just this week, brought in a big name banker who's now going to look after their digital program. And they're very much saying the future of finance is through blockchain technology. This is very much the future and where we're going. And when you start seeing that level up, that, I mean, if Goldman Sachs are coming in, it's because there's money in there. They're not wasting their time and their reputation on something that they don't think can be converted into something of use, or that this is where it's going. So for us who've been kind of rang it on from the sidelines for so long, it's fantastic to see the broadening out of people. I mean, I would not be one of those people who thinks it should be an exclusive camp at all. I think something like financial services, because that's my specialization, needs to be as broad as possible. And the fact that so many of these applications can be run off of your phone, huge implications worldwide, just in terms of, you know, financial inclusion, which I know is a drum that's beaten quite a bit, but it has got very, that suddenly got that real strength behind it and actually could actually happen. So, you know, it's fascinating, really, really good. But I mean, with that, all the caveats still apply, you know, again, to go back to that decentralized finance, this is still fairly raw in its state, still a lot of development to go, but that shouldn't put anybody off. But there should be some caution, say, particularly around decentralized finance. Some of the other more established spot market activity, longer track record, and I know that's because I'm running an exchange, but it is the more vanilla, if you like, approach to come in. So if somebody was still on the fence and just thinking about, would I get involved, won't I? I would say just start off with spot, put in, you know, $50 or whatever you feel comfortable with, and just start to get used to it and see how the market reacts. It's not like a traditional market in the sense of the volatility that you're looking at very much differs. That profile is very different and the factors that feed into it are different. So there is an education curve there perhaps to get comfy with it. But it's time now. It's definitely time.
And of course, the trick here is to understand that there is a speculative nature to the, you know, the, particularly the exchanges and how money is flowing, right? But as we've said before, that's a very small proportion of this broader universe that we're talking about in terms of the digital transformation, the decentralization. And I guess my question to you is, you know, in 5 to 10 years' time, you know, I've got my phone, right? So, you know, I've got my phone, right? In 5 to 10 years' time, this will be presumably a critical element in terms of the way that I do pretty much everything that I do, right? Yeah. What do you think? Do you think the smarts will be on the phone, or do you think the smarts will be in the cloud somewhere? And do you, you know? Do you say, so is it going to be a digital wallet here, or is it going to be a digital wallet there? Or, I mean, that for me is one of the really interesting tussly questions.
Well, to be honest, I'd be surprised if we're still using phones in 10 years' time.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest, I would have thought that by then it's something entirely virtual or holographic even. And then it sounds a bit far-fetched, but that to me seems like...
It's on Star Trek, so it must be
in
true.
In 10 years' time, that's exactly. Gene Roddenberry had an idea, you know, he was dead on. Like, why am I still carrying a phone in 10 years' time? I mean, I know for me, I like it. And I have a brick of a phone on purpose simply because I know I've forgotten it because I'm missing the weight in my handbag or jeans if I haven't got that with me. But that's because of the age demographic I'm at. But the next generations coming through will be very comfortable with something holographic and that you can just, virtual. I mean, that's where the technology is going. Hmm.
And that's why I was sort of asking the question, because it seems to me that ultimately there's going to be more out there in the cloud and less, if you like, you know, dependent on a specific device, because effectively the device effectively gets subsumed, right? And essentially, you know, the technologies will take us to places that we can barely imagine yet. But the point there is that the foundations are being laid for that future even now. And, you know, time to understand and get on board, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone or any society has won by betting against technology. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a historian to point that one, you know, that's just how it's always been. And I can understand why people perhaps initially would have had some concerns because of how Bitcoin and blockchain technology was A, intertwined, and B, how it was perceived to be used. And I can completely understand why people are like, you know, put off by that. But those times are gone. Yep. We've moved past that. And the adaptability and the use case for this technology, both in financial services and elsewhere, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear.
So I guess the message from today's discussion is, you know, this is real. It's happening. We don't know what the future will be, but we know that this is a trajectory that is pretty much unstoppable now. And perhaps it's time to find out more about it and begin to understand how these things can play out. Certainly, you know, turning back on it and saying this isn't the future is probably betting against technology, which is probably not very wise.
That's probably not the best decision to bet against technology. I wouldn't say that at all. Yeah, no, it would be. I would agree. It's as I say, for us, I mean, I know at the start of the year, I preface it in discussion with my team that this is going to be, we have about 6 months before this goes. And I think we've seen that that change has happened, that that switch is gone. Mm. And the only reason I had any kind of confidence in saying that was because I could see the head of steam that was being built locally and around the world around it, and it's coming now. It's here. I mean, that's sort of still, there's so much more other stuff that's really exciting to talk about. I mean, you know, other than just decentralized finance, there's so many other ins and outs and intricacies. But I think just as a for a retail audience to come in and just to come in and get familiar with it is probably the best first step that anyone can possibly take.
Well, I appreciate your time today, Caroline. I always enjoy exploring these issues with you because, you know, your vision as to where it's heading is just so exciting. And so we'll share that and we'll come back and have another conversation with you and perhaps go into some of these other areas too, because, you know, wherever you look, there are things we can talk about. So thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Martin. It was always good fun. Thank you.
Thanks.